Okay. We are holding, off everyone. We are holding on mem test on the days 5 lines from the bottom. We said in the Mishnah, "Begize semerva in metaltlin." We said you're allowed to do hatsmana of a pot to keep it hot for Shabbos. You're allowed to do hatsmana in shearings of wool, pieces of wool that you shear off an animal. But in metaltlin, we said you're not allowed to move them because they're mukta. Because we said that usually shearings of wool are used to make, used to spin into thread to make cloth, and therefore they'd be mukta on Shabbos. However, loishanu ela shalei tamim behen. The Rava says this rule would apply only if you didn't actually do hatsmana with them. But if you did hatsmana with them, then you would be allowed to move them. In other words, what Rava is saying is that there are two different dinim in the Mishnah. Number one, the Mishnah is telling us that you can do hatsmana in shearings of wool, and that's not a problem because they're not moisif hevel, as we've been learning. The whole distinction is between whether it's moisif hevel, whether when you put the pot inside it, is it going to add heat to the pot, or is it going to just preserve the existing heat? Shearings of wool just preserve the existing heat, therefore it would be mutter. However, you're not allowed to move, and then the Mishnah is saying, a separate din, the Mishnah is saying that you should know in general shearings of wool are mukta. So if you didn't use these particular ones for hatmana, then you're not allowed to move them on Shabbos. These particular ones, if you use them, then you would actually be allowed to move them on Shabbos, because the fact that you did hatmana with them shows that you're designating them for that purpose, or at least for that Shabbos. They're not mukta. Eisvei ahumer abonan bar yoyme l'rova. So one of the chachamim who had come the first time that day to the
Alexander.
Yes.
That means the only ones that are non-mukti are the ones you're using?
So in other words, if you're using them this Shabbos, then they're not mukta, would be the implication, right? So if
and implying that the other ones would be.
Right. So generally speaking, wool shearings would be mukta because you're planning to use them for thread or whatever, and therefore you don't want them to get dirty, and therefore they would be mukta machna sistarin kis, or they might instead be mukta machna gufa because they don't have a usable purpose on Shabbos. So you wouldn't be allowed to move them on Shabbos. But if you did have some honor with them, then you're allowed to. However, one of the Chachamim who had come on that day for the first time to the Beit Medrash asked Rava a question. And who was this Chacham, by the way? In the Seres Hashas, and also Rav Nissim Gaon bring that actually this was Rav Ivi. The Gemara mentions in Chagiga that this Rav Ivi lived very far away from the Beit Medrash. It would take him a 3-month trip to get there, and then he was only able to spend one day there. He'd take 3 months to go into the Beit Medrash, and then he'd stay there for one day, then he has to leave, and then it takes him 3 months to get home, and then by the time he gets home, it's time to leave again. He stays home briefly with his family, and then he leaves again, and therefore he's only in the Beit Medrash twice a year. So in fact, the Gemara says over there that some of the Chachamim were making fun of him and calling him Bar Bei Rav B'Chad Yoma, the one day Tamar Chacham, like as if to say, you know, like you know, that's the Tamar Chacham when he only shows up here one or two days a year. And then the Gemara goes on to explain that Rava pointed out to them that actually no, he's accomplishing a very great thing by that, and Hashem really appreciates that he's putting in that effort and going all this way to be in the Beis Medrash one time. So according to the Nissim Goyen, and what Mesoras Hashas brings, that it was actually, that it was this Rav Ivi asked this question to Rava. We say in the Mishnah, the Mishnah continues, Toimin Begizei Semer, you're allowed to do Hatmana with shearings of wool, the aim the Talpla Noisem, but the Mishnah says you're not allowed to move them, and the Mishnah continues, Keisadhu Oise, so what should you do if you did Hatmana in wool, and in shearings of wool, and now on Shabbos you need to be taking out the food from the pot, so how are you supposed to do it if it's covered with the wool shearings? So the Mishnah says, Noitol Sakisui, you take off the cover of the pot, the aim Noitlois, and then the shearings fall off on their own, meaning, in other words, that even though you did Hatmana with them, you're still not allowed to move them. So what are you telling us that if you did have smana with them, then they're not mukta. The Mishnah is evidently implying that they are mukta. So the Gemara says, you're right. Ela I itmar hochi itmar. So rather, if it was said, then what it means is it was said as follows. That expression, by the way, I itmar hochi itmar, is an interesting one. Literally, it means if it was said, then this is how it was said. Meaning, in other words, the Gemara is saying, not necessarily did Rava actually say this. If he said it, then this must be how he said it. Which leads Tosfos to point out, in that case, it can't be that Rav Iddi asked Rava himself, because then in that case, the Gemara wouldn't be doubting that Rava said it. Rather, we have to say, evidently, that at some later point, when Rav Iddi was in the Beis Medrash and Rava wasn't around, then he pointed out this question on this version that the Chachamim are saying of what Rava said. Now, obviously, that doesn't mean the Gemara thinks that the Chachamim are lying or something, Chas v'Shalom, when we say, Itmar Hochi Itmar. What it means is, many, many times throughout Shas, when we say that so-and-so, that this Tano, this Hamoda said something, many times it doesn't mean that he said it in so many words. Many times it just means that he said something from which we can infer that point. Which is that we even have. We had earlier in the Masechta, for example, Beferish Itmar or Beklola Itmar. This that you're saying, for example, we learned before, this that you're saying that Rabbi Yochanan said, we had in the previous paragraph, did he say it explicitly or did he say something from which you're inferring that this is what he would hold? So the same thing over here. The Gemara is saying, in other words, not necessarily did Rava say in so many words that this is what the Mishnah means, because Rav Iddi is pointing out that the Bar Bei Rav, the Talmud Chacham on the first day is pointing out that it doesn't fit with the continuation of the Mishnah. So therefore, if Rava actually said something from which you're going to infer a din about this, then we have to say that what Rava said must have been as follows. Omar Rava, Loi Shanu, that again, we're not quoting in the exact words that Rava said, but rather we're quoting something that we could infer from Rava's words, and that would be as follows. Loi Shanu Elashala Yichta Masmana, this that we say, that they're not mukta, that they are mukta, would only be if you didn't designate them, that you on a regular basis, you're going to use them for Atmana. Avo Yichta Masmana, but if you designated from now on, I am using these wool shearings for Hatmana, then the Talp Benoitan, then you would be allowed to move them because then they're not Mukta. So not like the first version where we're saying that as long as you did Hatmana with it one time, it would be allowed. Only if you set them up that as a regular thing from now on, I'm going to be using them for Hatmana, then you would be allowed to move them on Shabbos because then they're not Mukta anymore. But otherwise they would be Mukta. Itmar Nami, we said, or it was said also that was confirmed by another guy, another Amora. He also Robin, when Robin came from Eretz Yisrael, he said, Omer of Yaakov, Omer of Asi ben Shol, Omer Rebbe, Lo Shanu El Shol Yichta Matmana. This rule that you're not allowed to move them is only if you didn't designate them for Atmana, Avo Yichta Matmana. But if you designated them for Atmana, Matal Benoistan, then you would be allowed to move them on Shabbos because now they're not Mukta, whatever kind of mukta it is, they're not mukta anymore. They're not mukta machmas chisorin kis, because you're obviously not reserving them anymore for making thread out of, because now you reserve them for Atmana. They're not mukta machmas gufay for the same reason, because mukta machmas gufay would only be, for example, something that's not a keli, a stone, a rock, a piece of wool, or whatever, which is not designated for a particular purpose. But in this case, you're designating it for a particular purpose, so it wouldn't be mukta. Okay. Ravina says, and we're going to talk in a second, is Ravina disagreeing with what we just answered or not? So Ravina Omar b'shal hesket from me. Ravina says that the Mishnah that we're talking about over here is talking about wool that comes from the heftik. A heftik means, Rashi defines it over here, as a pile or warehouse or something of wool or other materials that you're going to be selling. In fact, according to that, if we say that the word heftik means like a warehouse or something, it's actually related then, possibly, so you have the word in English, a fancy word for a pharmacy, an old style word for a pharmacy is an apothecary. And in some languages, they use that to this day. And in Russian, for example, a pharmacy is apteka. That comes from the same word as heftik over here, because it means a storage area. Anyway, the point is, so Ravina is saying that We're talking about wool from the storage, from the warehouse. Because, in other words, therefore, since it was in the warehouse, then, or in the pile, as Rashi is saying, that you're planning to, then obviously it shows that you designated it, that you're planning to sell it. But otherwise not. So in other words, Ravina would be saying, there's a couple of different ways of explaining what. Well, one second. Tanya Nami Hachi. We learn similarly in the Brisa. Gizeh Semesh al Heftik in the Talp Lenoisan. That shearings of wool from the Heftik, you're not allowed to move them on Shabbos because they're Mukta. The Miskinen Balabais. The Yishtamish Behen. But if the Balabais designated them in order to use them, the Talp Lenoisan, then you would be allowed to move them on Shabbos. So in other words, now there's a couple of ways of understanding what Ravina is saying. One way is that Ravina is saying you don't need this that you're trying to change what we reported Rava said the first time, where again in the first time Rava had said that once you use them for Atmana, even if only one time, then they're not Mukta anymore. And then we said, how does that fit with our Mishnah? So Ravina would be answering that there's a difference between whether they come from the Heftik or not. If they come from the Heftik, then you would say that then even if you use them one time, then they would be Mukta. Whereas Rava wasn't in reference to our Mishnah, therefore. Rava's statement was a more general statement where they don't belong to the Heftik. They didn't come from the warehouse. And then using them even one time is enough to not make them Mukta. That's one way of explaining what Ravina says, that he's saying, in other words, you were saying we can't accept the original version of what Rav is saying, because it seems to contradict the Mishnah, but not necessarily. In fact, what Rav is saying could well fit with the Mishnah, but it wasn't in reference to the Mishnah. It was a separate game. Okay, Tosfos says that even so, the fact is, Rava used the expression loy shonu, implying that he's referring to the Mishnah. So therefore, so Tosfos is saying that, okay, we would say that the Mishnah starts by talking about any kind of gizeh semer, and then Rava is saying if they didn't, within whether you did atmana with them, then you have a distinction whether they came from the heftik or not, namely whether you did it one time or not. So basically, in other words, the question is Ravina arguing with one of the versions of Rava that we said, or is he not? Is he saying that once you use them, then it's mutter unless they came from the heftik. That understanding of it is what's brought in Shulchan Aruch, that it's in general gizeh semer. That there's a difference. If they come from the heftik, if they come from the warehouse, then it would have to be that you designated them, that you're going to use them for atmana, for all time, and then they're not mukta. But if they didn't come from the heftik, then you're allowed to, then even if you only did them one time, then it would be mukta. Okay. Continues the Gemara.
The heftik is what? It's a...
We said a heftik is a warehouse or a pile or something, a warehouse or a pile of something of material that you're designating for selling or for some other purpose like that.
Mm-hmm.
It may be related to a Greek word for a warehouse, which is the root of the word apothecary in English and aptek in Russian, apteka, for example, in Russian, that means a pharmacy. So that's essentially what a pharmacy is, right? It's kind of a warehouse of medicine. All right. Anyway. Okay. New topic. Since we started talking about mukta, so now we're going to digress from the matter of hatmana and talk about more matters of mukta. Now, in the previous paragraph, we talked a lot about mukta. Mostly, we were focusing on mukta as it applies. I mean, we had a lot of different discussion about it, but a lot of the discussion that we had there was about mukta as it applies to various kinds of kavim. We talked about, for example, a lamp, when it's mukta, when it isn't, various other kinds of things. Now we're going to be focusing on the kind of mukta called mukta machmas gufay, which is you have certain things that are intrinsically mukta because they're not a keli and they don't have any real function on they could have a function on Shabbos, but you didn't designate them before Shabbos that they're going to be used for any particular function. For example, rocks, sticks, things like that. They're muktzah because you didn't designate them before. You didn't designate this rock before Shabbos that you're going to do anything with it. So even though on Shabbos conceivably you could do something with it, you could start using it as a doorstop or something. Nevertheless, it's muktzah because it's not a keli and you didn't have it in mind before Shabbos. So this is the kind of muktzah that we're going to be focusing on now. So the Gemara says, Om toner rabba baba chana kameda rab. So rabba baba chana tore a braita in front of rab. Charius shobdefil, branches of a palm tree. Charius, by the way, is you have the young branches are the kind we use as lulavim. Eventually, the branches mature and become hard, and at that point is when they're called charius. The branches of palm trees shagodrim la'etim. If you cut them off the tree before Shabbos, intending to use them for firewood, in which case they're muktzah on Shabbos because you can't use them for firewood on Shabbos, obviously. But then the nimrach aleihem liyeshiva, if you later on had in mind, after you cut them off the tree, that you plan to sit on them, sarich lekasher, you have to tie them together before Shabbos in order to do a maisa, that now you're planning to sit on them. You have Rabbeinu Prachia, who gives a different explanation. He says that what it means is you weave them together to make a sort of mat that you're going to sit on. In other words, kosher, not just that you tie them together with string or something like Rashi is saying, but rather that you actually weave them together kind of to make a mat. Okay. So the Rashba brings something similar from a Baha'i Goyim, that they actually tie each leaf or something of the Charius one to the other. Anyway, so that's the Tanakhama is saying you need to do that in order to be able to sit on them on Shabbos. Rav Shimon Gamliel, says that you do not need to tie them. Just the fact that you had a machshava that you're going to sit on them takes away the muktzah status. So who Tony Law, Rabba Babachana taught that Brisa, well who Omar Law, and then he added beside the Brisa, you should know Halacha could have Shimon Gamliel, that's the Halacha that could Shimon Gamliel, the Machshava is enough to make it considered that you're allowed to sit on them even without actually doing any mitzvah to them. So Isma, we have a further discussion about that, a Machlokas Amaroyim. Rab Omar Kosher, Rab says you have to tie them together, which is like the Tanakhama. Or Shmuel on a choshev. Shmuel says it's enough that you think about them, which is like Rav Shimon Gamliel. And then we have a third opinion. Rav Asi says it's good enough yoshev as long as you sat on them even one time before Shabbos. Alpha pishle kishev, even if you didn't tie them together, even if you didn't particularly have in mind that you're going to sit on them, that you happen to sit on them before Shabbos, then even then, Rav Asi is saying that is good enough to make them that they're not muktzah before, that they're not muktzah anymore. Now the Ritva points out that on the one hand, these palm branches are not so easy to sit on as it is to put a pot into a bunch of shearings of wool. Therefore, there's reason to say that you need something more than you needed with the wool. Not just that you, in the case of the wool, it was enough to just use it as a mana for the pot. Whereas here, you might actually have to tie them together. On the other hand, the other way of looking at it is that the wool, it's something important. You're planning to use it for making cloth, which is a pretty important thing. On the other hand, these palm branches, the only thing you're going to be using them for is firewood, so maybe they're less important. So that's why you have the different opinions over here of what you need. Is it enough to have machshava? Is it enough, even less than machshava, that you sat on them one time before Shabbos, or do you actually need a meister? Okay, so three opinions. So the question is, how does that fit with the bright that we just said? Bishleima Rav Uda Amakatana Kama. Okay, Rav's opinion we understand. He follows the Tanakama of the previous bright. Ushmuel Mami Uda Amakat of Shimon Gamliel. Shmuel says, like Rav Shimon Gamliel. So fine, each of them is backed up by a Tana. So far, so good. Ella, Ela Rav Asi Dama Kaman. But who is Rav Asi? But who is Rav Asi following? He doesn't. Even Rav Shimon Gamliel seems to be requiring that you actually think about before Shabbos of sitting on them. And Rav Asi is not even requiring that. Just the fact that you sat on them, even just as an ad hoc thing, seems to be enough. So where is he getting that from? The answer is Hu De'omar Ki Hai Tana. The answer is that Rav Asi is following yet another Tana, that we have another Braisa on this subject. The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Yotzin B'Pakurin, you're allowed to go out on Shabbos with Pakurin, or with Tzipa. Pakurin, Rashi explains, is you take flax and you comb it out, and Tzipa is you have wool that you combed out, and either way you make a flat thing out of it. Rashi explains that we're talking about that these are, you put them on a wound. So a person has a wound, a person has a sore on their body, so they cover it with something like that in order to protect it. So you're allowed to do that on Shabbos. You're allowed to go out with it. It's not considered carrying. Bizman shetzavan b'shemen b'kochan b'mashicha, as long as beforehand you dyed them, you dipped them in oil. Actually, you have the potion would say that sub, I mean, died, but if we're saying over here, b'shemen, according to the Gersa over here that we have in front of us that says b'shemen with oil, then it would mean that you dipped them in oil. We actually had, in this week's Parsha Tazria Masorah, we have, Rashi mentions that you have various places, you have in the case of Tzorach of clothing, it mentions a number of times that you have various situations where you have to wash the clothing to see if the tzaras goes away, and Targum Onkelos always translates that as the yischavar, which means to wash it, like when you're laundering it. But then you have at the end it says that if the tzaras goes away, then you have to v'chubas, then you have to wash it, and it becomes completely tar. And there, Targum Onkelos translates it, not you wash it, as in the laundry, but you tovel it. The yitzaba, he translates it, which is the word in Aramaic for toveling. So we see that tzaba can mean to tovel. So according to that, it would mean over here that also that you're dipping the wool or the linen in oil before Shabbos, which shows that you are planning to, which shows that you did something to it to make it usable as a dressing for a wound. Or you tied it on with a swing before Shabbos so it doesn't fall off.
But one second, if you do that, you're going to do Shechita on Shabbos.
No, because it's sitting there on the wound. You're not going to squeeze it out.
By tying a wool and pressing it on the wound.
No, tying it on Shabbos. You're tying it on before Shabbos. So if he tied it on before Shabbos, or if he dipped it in oil before Shabbos, then he's allowed to wear it outside on Shabbos, mm-hmm. and it's not considered carrying. Because then he did a maisa to show that. That it's not just a regular piece of wool or linen, but. But if he did not dip them in oil and he did not tie them on with a string, then you're not allowed to go out with them on Shabbos because then you didn't do any maisa to show that you're making it any different than regular wool or linen. And regular plain old wool or linen is mukta, because again, usually you would use it to make thread and to make cloth. But the braisa continues. If you went out with them even one time on Shabbos, if you went out wearing them on the wound even one time before Shabbos, then even if you didn't dip them in oil and even if you didn't tie them on with a string, then you would be allowed to go out with them on Shabbos. Because then you showed by doing it even one time that you're planning to do that, that you're using them for that purpose. So therefore, Rav Asi is following that. So we see that even though you didn't specifically have a machshava that you're planning to use it on an ongoing basis, just the fact that you went out with it one time before Shabbos is enough. So therefore, so the same thing when it comes to the pieces, when it comes to the branches from the palm tree, just the fact that you sat on them one time before Shabbos is enough to take away the mukta status. Now, this that we defined, by the way, that we defined pakurin and tzipa, that we're saying that you're putting them on a wound that you're putting them on a wound as a dressing. That's Rashi's explanation. Tosfos brings from Rabbeinu Hananel a different explanation. That what are you using this pakurin and the stipa for? They are types of wigs. They're types of wigs that bald people will wear on their heads, and they in order to look like they have hair. So then again, we're saying that if you dyed them or dipped them in oil or whatever, made them, you did something. So if you did something to them to show that they're meant to be used as a wig, then you'd be allowed to wear them on Shabbos. Otherwise not. Again, unless this Braita is saying, unless you actually wore it one time before Shabbos, then you would be allowed to wear it on Shabbos. So actually in Shulchan Aruch it brings both understandings, that it is talking about a dressing on a wound. And it's also talking about a wig. So in both cases, if you did a maisa to them, then for sure it's good and you're allowed to wear them on Shabbos. But if you didn't, then just the fact. So now, who is the halacha like? And this to me, when I quote this, most of the Rishonim paskin like Rav Asi. I don't know most, but the Rambam at least paskin like Rav Asi, and Shulchan Aruch follows him because, as the Gemara is going to point out, we have a Braisa that supports him, and Rav Ashi is going to point out now that we have a Mishnah later on in Omer Sechta that also seems to work according to him. Tosfos learns that not. Tosfos learns the halacha would be like Rav that you have to actually do a Maisa in order to designate it for the purpose. So if you did a Maisa, then for sure there's no problem. But if you only had a Machshava, then in Shulchan Aruch and Paskins that you're still allowed to. Just the Machshava is enough to make it that, or no, the Machshava. But also we're saying that if he actually wore it one time before Shabbos, then he's still allowed. It's not mukta anymore, and he's allowed to put it back on Shabbos. What it does talk about in Shulchan Aruch, if we say, if we're talking about a dressing or we're talking about a wig, then it's not so simple to actually wear it outside on Shabbos, because if you didn't, for example, so what it says in Shulchan Aruch, when it comes to the dressing, then fine, you can do it, even you can walk out with it to Rosh Hashanah. But in the case of the wig, it's not so simple. If it's not something that's made into a wig, then maybe it's not good enough. Shulchan Aruch says yesh oitrim, that you might be osur, because the fact that you didn't do anything to show that it's actually a wig, all you have is machshava, it makes it look like you're trying to play a trick over here. It makes it look like you're trying to play around with the dinim of Shabbos. Like, you know, here, I have to get this wool from point A to point B, so I'm going to pretend that I'm wearing it as a wig. So therefore, it brings into one article that yes, Oistrim, to wear such a thing on Shabbos, unless you actually did something to make it into a wig.
Question.
Yeah.
Well, that applies to a face mask. That mask you've been wearing during the week and you wear on Shabbos,
it's like the ones we're using now? It's a very good question, and I was thinking before this shiur that probably you or somebody is going to bring up that question. I didn't have a chance to look up into it, actually. I know that I've seen things where there are rabbanim who are saying that you can go out with a mask on Shabbos. I suppose that's based on this. I mean, it might be based on this. It might even be that you don't need this, because a mask, after all, is a kind of beged. I don't really know, actually, but it could very well be that, yes, it could very well be that this factors into it because you're doing it like in the case of a wig, where a person is doing it in order to not look bald. Here, a person is doing it for their health. So it might be actually it is based on the same principle. But as far as actual practical halacha, You ask the Rav, of course. Okay. Okay. But Rav Ashi says, Afanan Nami Tanena. In fact, we have a Mishnah later on in Omer Sechta that proves what Rav Ashi is saying, that just the fact that you used it one time before Shabbos, even if you didn't specifically have in mind that you're going, that you're going to use it on Shabbos, it would still not be mukta anymore, because we have a Mishnah later on in Omer Sechta that says, Hakash Shagabe Amita, straw that's on top of a bed, then that straw normally is mukta, because what do you usually use straw for? You use it for you usually use it for fuel for a fire, or you use it for putting into bricks like the Jewish people in Mitzrayim. So therefore, normally it's mukta.
Isn't the use for those days that's the use of beds?
Ah, so therefore, but here we're talking about, in other words, that you have straw that's lying on a bed. We're not talking about the normal way they did in those days, is you'd have your mattress would be stuffed with straw or something. That's not what we're talking about over here. Here we're talking about there's just straw lying on top of the bed. Therefore, the Mishnah says, lo yinanei biyadei, you're not allowed to move it with your hands in order to spread it out and make it comfortable because it's mukta. Ava menanei begufei, but you're allowed to move it around with your body. In other words, you lay down on the bed, And you move this part with your knee and this part with your shoulder and whatever, and you get it positioned where you want to, because that's not the normal way of moving it. That's called tilto kala'achal yad. And in that case, you're allowed to move mukta. You're allowed to move mukta kala'achal yad. This is why we have, for example, sometimes you have where you find a mukta thing where you don't need it, and you move it with your elbows, or you pick it up with your teeth or something, you move it, is based on this concept, or you kick it with your foot or something. That's example of tilto kalachayad. But the Mishnah continues, avalim hoya olav maicha behema, but if the straw is the kind of straw that can be used as animal food, so then it's not mukta. Oy shahoya olav kar esodim in ba'odyayim, or if before Shabbos there was a pillow or a sheet on top of it, meaning there was something on it before Shabbos that a person laid on it. Now there's a pillow or a sheet left on top of it. Then menanei biyadei, then you're actually even allowed to move it with your bare hands, because now it's not mukta anymore. So you see from that, even though you didn't do a maisa to make the straw any different, even though you didn't do anything to the straw itself, you just laid down on it before Shabbos, and you didn't necessarily stay with that or think with that, I'm actually planning to sleep on it on Shabbos, nevertheless, that straw is not mukta anymore. So then what says Shramina? Okay, so that proves Rav Aki's point, and therefore that proves Rav Aki's point based on that Mishnah. So again, many of the Rishonim Paskin like Rav Aki in that. And even in Tosfos, it brings that Rabbeinu Shimshon HaZokin held like Rav Asi, given that we have this proof for him. However, Tosfos says that Rabbeinu Tam learns that actually the halacha should be like Rav on the basis of something that they discussed towards the end of the Masechta. Okay. So the Gemara says, so far we have three opinions. We have the Tanakama of the first Braisa, who says that you actually need to tie the branches together to make them not mukta. We had Rav Shimon Gamliel said it's enough to have a machshava. Well, he just said ein tzarech l'kasher. He said you don't need to tie them, which seems to imply, in other words, that you have to have a machshava. And then you have the second Braisa, that implied, and we said that's where Rav Asi gets his opinion from, that even if you didn't have a specific machshava, you're going to use it on Shabbos, and you didn't do a specific Braisa, just the fact that you did it one time before Shabbos, even as an ad hoc thing, is enough. So Gemara asks, Uman Tana de Poligale de Rav Shimon Gamliel, who is the Tana Kama in the first Braisa, who's arguing with Rav Shimon Gamliel and saying that you actually need a Maisa in order to tie the branches together in order to be allowed before Shabbos, in order to be allowed to sit on them on Shabbos. Which Tana is that? And the answer is Rav Hanina ben Akiva. That Tana would be Rav Hanina ben Akiva. And we know that he also Rav Dimi, because when Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael, Omar the Iri Omar Rav Hanina, he said in the name of the Iri, who in the name of Rav Hanina, Pam Achas Holach Rav Hanina ben Akiva L'Mokam Achor. One time Rav Hanina ben Akiva went to a certain place. Pashtus, by the way, Rav Hanina ben Akiva, I guess we would assume, is the son of Rav Akiva, but I don't know. Anyway, maybe not though, because then it would call him Rav Hanina ben Reb Akiva. I don't know. Anyway, so this Rav Hanina ben Akiva one time went to a certain place. He found branches of palm trees like that, Shagodrum Lashem Asim, that they had chopped them off of the tree intending to use for firewood. So he tells the Talmidim before Shabbos, u'b'chishvu, go out and think about them and mentally designate that we're going to sit on them, k'desh neishav aleihem ha'machor, in order that tomorrow we can sit on them. And the Iri adds in his report of the story, v'lo yadayne ibeis ha'mishta hava ibeis ha'evel hava. Now, what I don't know is, was the situation, why do they all of a sudden need things to sit on, which they didn't have before? It's either because it was a beis ha'mishta, it was a wedding or a sheva brachas or something, and therefore they needed extra seats, or it was a beis ha'evel, it was the opposite, it was a shiva call, and they're going to need extra seats. So only because there was a tzorach mitzvah involved, then therefore he was saying that having in mind would be good enough. Otherwise he would have required them to actually tie them together in order to make them not mukta. So we see from that the Gemara says, mid ka'ama e beisa mishta hava e beisa evel hava. Since we're saying that we're not sure whether it was a wedding simcha or an oval, that means davka beisa evel or beisa mishta, the tree, where since they're busy with the simcha or the avelos, as the case may be, so therefore they don't actually have time to tie them together. Therefore, Rav Hanina tells them it's good enough in this case to have in mind. But in a regular case where you don't have that consideration, kosher aim like kosher loy. Only if you tie them together before Shabbos would they be mutter. And if you didn't tie them together, then not. So we see that Rav Hanina ben Akiva says that generally speaking, you have to tie them together, and if not, they will be mutter. Only because it was a beis ha'mishta or a beis ha'evel, as he's saying, we can make an exception to that rule and allow it even without that. So we see that he's the Tanakama of the previous Braisa, and then you have Rav Shimon Gamliel, and then you have the other Braisa. Okay. More on the topic of mukta, and again, where we have something that ordinarily would be mukta machmas gufo, because it's something which in and of it's not an actual keli, and in and of itself would be mukta because you didn't pre-designate it before Shabbos, but when you do, then it becomes mukta. So now another example of that. Amr of Yehuda, machnis adam malaykul posay offer, a person is allowed to bring in before Shabbos a basket full of dirt into his house and pour it out onto the ground in his house. But and then on Shabbos he's allowed to use that dirt for any purpose that he might need dirt for on Shabbos. For example, there's waste on the floor, from a baby going to the bathroom or something. You might have spit or whatever, so you take some of this dirt and use it to cover that. So you're allowed to do that on Shabbos, because once you brought in the dirt, then you're showing by that it's not plain old dirt, that you intend to use it on Shabbos. But there's a consideration in that. Mazutra said, Darshin, in the name of Mazutra Rabba, so apparently there's an elder Mazutra and a younger Mazutra. Anyway, but Hushiyichav like Heren Zavit. This rule only would work only if he designated a particular corner in his house for it, then we would say that it's considered mukhan, and now he's allowed to use it on Shabbos. But if you just put it on the, if you just put it in the middle of the floor and people are going to end up stepping on it, then it just becomes bottled to the rest of the dirt floor of the house, and therefore it goes back to being mukhan. So if you put it in a particular corner, then it would be allowed. Okay. Amru Rabbanan Kameh D'Rapapa. So the Chachamim asked your papa, Kimman, which Tana is this going according to, that you're saying that you actually have to designate a corner for it, and you have to actually bring it in. Now, the question is the other way around. The question is, you didn't do any maisa to the actual dirt, because in the case of the branches, the palm trees, you actually did something to the palm trees themselves. To the palm branches themselves, you tied them together. Whereas over here, you're not doing anything to the actual dirt itself. All you did is, as a whole, you picked it up and brought it into the house. So that would be the equivalent, the palm branches, let's say, of taking a bunch of branches and carrying them from point A to point B. According to the Shimon Gamliel, that might be enough, because all you need is makshava. But according to the Tanakama in the earlier Braita, we said, according to the Rabbanon, which we said was a Chanina ben Akiva, you would need an actual maisa, which is, in the case of the palm branches, tying them together. So over here, why is just the fact that he brought in the dirt without doing anything to the actual dirt grains themselves considered already a maisa? But I asked him, this seems to be only Kaman. It seems to be, who is that like? Could have Shimon Gamliel. It seems to be only like Shimon Gamliel. The Ikra Rabbanon, if it was according to the Rabbanon, that Rav Hanan ben Akiva, Ha'amni Ba'in and Maiseh. Didn't they say that you generally require a Maiseh, tying the actual branches together? So why over here is he saying that it's good enough if you, so why over here would he be saying that's good enough if you just bring it in and put it in a corner of the house? So the answer is, Rav Papa tells them, Afilu Temer Abonon, you don't need that. You could even say that it goes according, that this statement of Rabbi Hoda works according to the Chachamim, because Ad Kan like Amir Abonon to be in Maiseh, you know when the Abonon, you know when Rav Hanina ben Akiva says it, in Maiseh, El Midi Debar Avizu Be Maiseh. Only when it's something where it is, where you are capable of doing a Maiseh to the actual individual thing. In this case, you're able to just bring it, you're able to just move the palm trees, the palm branches from one place to another, but you're able to do something in addition to the individual branches, tying them together. But when it comes to dirt, Avamidi, when it comes to dirt, you can't do anything to the individual grains of dirt. There's no particular maita that you can do it to show that it's designated for this purpose of covering up filth on the floor more than just bringing it in. Therefore, it's good enough. Even the Chachamim would agree that you don't need an actual maita with the dirt itself. Just bringing it in, just bringing it into your house, bringing it from point A to point B and putting it in a corner of your house is the maximum maita you could do with dirt, and therefore they would agree that's good enough. Only when you have, where there's two levels of maita that you could do, one which is just moving it from one place to another, and the other which involves actually, for example, tying them together, then the Rabbanan, then Rav Hanina ben Akiva would say you need the second kind.
But actually, you can do something with this earth that's in a pot. You can, you know, clog it together with your hands, and that should be a maaseh.
Well, first of all, that's still not, well, maybe, but I mean, that kind of defeats the purpose, because the whole point is you want to be able to spread it out over filth that's on the floor on Shabbos. You don't want to clump it together.
A small part of it.
Yeah, but then you could say, okay, that small part, you designated the rest now. I mean, you would say with the palm branches, if you tied half of the branches together and then left the other half untied, you would say, according to Rav Hanina ben Akiva, only the ones that are tied. You could use the ones that are not tied, you can't.
And why doesn't the Gemara say that just by bringing it in, it's very unusual to bring earth into a house, then you show that's the mice.
Well,
itself.
Nowadays that we have wooden or tile floors or carpet or whatever, of course it's unusual to bring dirt into your house. In those days, when they had dirt floors, it was probably a very normal thing. But the point is, just bringing it in, that's what I'm saying, just bringing it in and of itself is not a mice in the goof. It's considered only a machshav. And that's why we actually said that. That's why, unless you put it in a corner, b'chalal, it stays mukta anyway, because then it just gets stepped on and just blends in with the rest of the dirt in the house. Yeah. Okay. So the Gemara says, name a ketanoi. Should we say that okay, the Papa is telling us like this. If you have something where a maita, the gufa, is not relevant, then even the Chachamim are going to agree that you don't need a Maiseh B'Gufay, because not something that you could do to it. Therefore, they agree that Machshava is enough. This point that Rav Papa is saying, name a Ketanoi. Should we say there's actually a Machloka Ketanoim on that subject? Because we learn in a Braisa, Bakol Chofin Es HaKelim, you're allowed to rub Kelim with any material on Shabbos in order to clean them. Chus Miklei Kesef V'Gautakoin. Except for silver kalim on Shabbos, you're not allowed to rub them with gautikoin. What is gautikoin? Rashi describes that you have like this. At the bottom of barrels of wine, you have this sediment that forms at the bottom of barrels of wine, this very hard sediment. In English, it's called tartar. In English and in a number of other languages, it's called tartar. So they, and the point is, tartar is something that you can use it's something that is useful for scrubbing silver, but the problem is when you use it on silver, then it smooths out the silver, and that would be also on Shabbos because you have a malacha of memachek, which is smoothing something out. We talked about it in the previous perek in connection with smearing ointments or other such things. that you have it, but it also applies over here where you're smoothing out the surface of the silver, and this gautika, and this substance, the tartar or whatever, has the capability of doing that. There's a couple of other explanations. The Aruch and the Gaonim bring explanations along the lines of that, if I'm understanding them correctly, means something like soot. Whatever it is, the point is it's something that if you rub it on silver, it will polish it and smooth it, and that would be also on Shabbos, as opposed to other things, implying, since it's saying that you can't use gautikon, the point is, though, you could use anything else, even, for example, nectar, which is a cleaning agent that we've talked about a few times in the Masechta. It's some kind of compound that includes nitrogen. The word nectar is distantly related to the word nitrogen. So it could be something like baking soda. It could be something like whatever. There's a few possibilities what it is. So you're allowed to use that. You're allowed to use sand, apparently, because those don't polish the silver. Those don't smooth it out quite as much as gautikon does. So that's one brisa. V'hatanya, nectar v'choil also. But another brisa says that you're not allowed to use nectar or sand either. So my lav v'ho kamisavi. Wouldn't that mean, in other words, that the underlying machlokes between the two brisas is, do we accept Rav Papa's point? D'mar sava b'inin maisa. The second brisa says that you need a maisa in order to make something. You always need a maisa in the goof of it to make something that otherwise would be mukta usable on Shabbos. In this case, sand, therefore, again, you can't do sand and nectar. They're both minerals. You can't do anything with them to make them usable. Not to make them usable. You can't do anything of a maisa to them to show that you're designating them for the purpose of cleaning, as opposed to them just being stam sand or stam nectar. So therefore, he would say you can't use them to polish silver on Shabbos, not because the problem is because they smooth out the silver, but because the problem is they're mukta. Whereas the Tana of the first Maisa would say that it's not mukta because you don't need a Maisa, because since nectar and sand, again, they're made up of a bunch of individual grains, you can't possibly do a Maisa begufay. Therefore, just the fact that you brought them into your house would be enough. So that would be, in other words, so Rav Papa's point would actually be subject to a machlokas tanoim. Not necessarily. We could say that both brayos dekulei alma loy be'inin maaseh. We could say that everybody would agree you don't need a maaseh when you have something like this, like sand or whatever, where it's not possible to do a maaseh in them. So when it's not possible to do a maaseh, then we don't require a maaseh. Then we say it's good enough to just have machshava. The machlokes between them would be something else. V'loy kasha, harav Yehuda, harav Shimon. The two brises would be the respective opinions of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Harav Yehuda, damo davashenim skaven oser. The second brise would be according to Rabbi Yehuda, that which we've learned before, davashenim skaven is oser. So therefore, it could happen even with sand or with nectar that you end up actually polishing and smoothing out the silver. It doesn't usually, but it could happen. And Rabbi Yehuda, we know, as we've learned a number of times, hold davar she'ein meskaven is oser. So even though you didn't intend to do a malacha, but if you end up doing it, Rabbi Yehuda still says it's oser. And therefore, he would not allow you to use sand or nectar because it could end up polishing and smoothing out the silver. Rav Shimon, where the first braisa would be like Rav Shimon, Dama Davashen Meskaven Mutter, who says that it's allowed if it's Davashen Meskaven, as we've learned before about dragging a bench. So therefore, Rav Shimon would say no problem using nectar or sand because those don't necessarily polish the silver, and therefore they just clean it, and therefore there's not necessarily going to be an issue of mamachik. Only gautikon, where necessarily it's going to be mamachik, that he wouldn't allow because it would be sick ratio. Okay. So the question is, b'mayu kinta l'hodeshori. Okay, so what are you saying? You're establishing, then you're saying that the first braisa that allowed it is Rav Shimon. You're saying that the first braisa is representing Rav Shimon's opinion, and therefore he's allowing it because he's saying only gautikon is not allowed because it's sikresha, but anything else, including nectar and choil, would be allowed because it's not sikresha. Amos Sefer, but look at the next part of the Braita, which continues, Ava la yochus behemet sairei, but you're not allowed on Shabbos to use neser uchol to rub your hair with on Shabbos, to rub neser uchol to rub neser or sand into your head on into your hair on Shabbos. That the Braita says you're not allowed to do because those kinds of things are likely to cause hair to come out on Shabbos, and you're not allowed to pluck hair on Shabbos. It's also as a tulda or as a derabanan of the malacha of goizes, of shearing. So the ear of Shimon. Now, if this braita goes according to Reb Shimon, we know mishua kashori. We know that Reb Shimon does allow a person to wash their hair with neser or choil, with neser or sand on Shabbos, even though it might cause hair, not just on Shabbos, but other times in the case of a nazir. A nazir is also not allowed to cut or pull out his hair, and yet Reb Shimon allows him to use neser or sand on his hair. This man, we learn in a Mishnah in Masechet Nazir, Nazir Choyfeh, a Nazir is allowed to rub his hair, and that means even with Neser or sand, Umafakteh, and he's also allowed to part his hair with his fingers. He's allowed to run his fingers through his hair to put his fingers through his hair, to separate his hairs. So with both of those things, with choifek, when he's using neter or sand on his hair, or when he's putting his hand through his hair to separate his hair, he may pull out hairs. But Reb Shimon again says, Dabar she'en miskaven is mutter. So therefore, I don't care if hairs do end up coming out because he didn't intend to. Avo lois sodek, but the Mishnah continues there. He's not allowed to comb his hair because combing is very likely to take out hairs. So, in fact, Tosfos over here quotes from the Gemara over there that says that when the person is combing his hair, he wants to take out the hairs. So Rashi over here says it's a matter of stick ratio, which implies he doesn't really want to take them out, but inevitably he's going to. Tosfos quotes from the Gemara over there that actually it means that he means to do that to begin with. So actually one explanation is that that's actually what Rashi means. He doesn't mean that if the stick ratio is what the Gemara there means, not that he actually intends to pull out loose hairs, but because it's inevitable, practically speaking, it amounts to that he wants that to happen. Anyway, the point is that now obviously that Mishnah is according to Reb Shimon, because Reb Yehuda, who holds Dabar she'en miskaven is mutter, would in fact say that a nazir is not allowed to rub neser or sand into his hair or to part it with his fingers because he might pull out hairs, and he holds Dabar she'en miskaven is mutter. But we see, so we see Reb Shimon does allow it. So why in the, so if you're going to say the previous braita that said about using neser and choil on kalim, on silver, as opposed to using it on your hair, it can't be a coincidence of Shimon, because Reb Shimon would allow it on your hair as well. Ella said no. We have to answer Havahar of Yehuda. Actually, we can answer that both braitas are a coincidence of Yehuda, both the one that said that you're allowed to use neser and sand on silver, and the one that says that you can't. Both of them would be a coincidence of Yehuda. So that's why saying that you can't, that's why saying you can't use it on your hair, because on your hair it's going to pull out hair, it may pull out hair, and that'll be Dabar she'en miskaven. With Trei Tanoim, a little bit of Rabbi Yehuda. However, you have two Tanoim who disagree within Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. Hai Tana, a little bit of Rabbi Yehuda, Sovev Gorir. The one Tana holds that Neser and Choyl might polish the silver, and therefore it would be after. The high Tana, the Tana of the first Bryce, who says there's no concern that Neser and Choyl are possibly going to smooth out and polish the silver in a way that would be after, and therefore they hold that it would be mutter. So it's not, they both agree that if it was possible for it to polish the silver, it would be after, but the first Bryce holds it's not possible for it to, Neser and Choyl do not have the property of being able to polish and smooth out silver like that, therefore it's mutter, as opposed to Gartikon, which does. And the second writer would say, Gartikon for sure does, and Neser and Choyl might, and therefore it would be altered. So therefore, the point is that neither of those writers has anything to do with what we were talking about, with Papa's point, that it has to do with the dinim of Mukta, because we're dealing with the dinim of Dabar she'en miskaven. Okay. the question is, Mayu Kigda, okay, so what are you telling me? You're establishing that the Braises are Rabbi Yehuda, that they're going according to Rabbi Yehuda, a mistake, but look at yet the next part of the Braise, which says that, again, it says you're not allowed to use Nestor and Choyl, you're not allowed to use Nestor and sand on your hair, but of a pun of Yad Vidagel Mutter, but you would be allowed to use it to wash your face or hands or feet on Shabbos. What do you mean you're allowed on your face? Homa Aber Seya. You have the same problem. It's going to cause hair to come out. Dovash Animus Gavin, Rabbi Yehuda holds his office. If we said it's a coincidence of Shimon, you could say the difference is that maybe on the head it's easier for it to pull out hair and harder when it comes to the beard. So therefore on the head it would be psikvesha, and on the beard it wouldn't necessarily. But if you're telling me the bride says according to Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Yehuda holds double shayim as kavod is also, who cares about psikvesha? Rabbi Yehuda doesn't hold a such distinction. The answer is iboyisem of a cotton, the iboyisem of a isha, the iboyisem of a sweet. I can find you three kinds of people who would be allowed to use it on their face: a child, a woman, or a sweet. None of them have a beard. There you go. Therefore, they would be allowed to use nectar or sand on their faces, but if we say the bride says according to Rabbi Yehuda, then you're right. A man would not be allowed to because he has a beard.
What about the eyebrows?
What about that's a good point. But maybe I guess the eyebrows are thin enough that you're not necessarily, that there's no reason to think that using this nectar or sand on them is going to pull out hair from the eyebrows. It's much easier. You think about it, mice and mahalia, it's a lot easier to pull out longer hairs than shorter hairs, right? And the eyebrows are fairly short hair. So it's going to be a lot harder to pull one of those out, even accidentally, by washing with nectar or oil, whereas when it comes, we're not even talking about pulling out necessarily, which we could be talking about even breaking off a hair. And then you're much more likely to break off or pull out a hair from your beard than you are from your eyebrows. But we do, by the way, see from this Gemara that a man is not supposed to be shaving, even with the kind of shavers that maybe would be allowed up the halacha. Because you see, the Gemara can only find a child or a woman or a swiss that doesn't have a beard, and otherwise they do.
That's right.
And, obviously you could find other cases as well. I mean, there's a Gemara and also in Masechta Nazir actually that mentions that Rabbi Yochanan was so old that Rabbi Yochanan lived to such an old age that his armpit hair fell out. We know by us in our community, you have Rabbi Shaul Friedman, Olav Shalom, that pretty much all of his beard fell out, right? So it happens also, but in general, yeah. All right, onward. Amr of Yehuda, since we're talking about things that you're allowed to wash, that you're allowed or not allowed to wash your hair, your face with on Shabbos, and again, halacha is like Rav Shimon, that Dovah She'enim Eskavin is mutter. Therefore, let's distinguish between different kinds of things that a person could wash their face with. That don't necessarily cause hair to pull off or to pull out or break off versus ones that necessarily do and therefore would be tzikresha. So the Gemara says, "Amar Rabbi Yehuda, afal v'zenta shorim. You would be allowed to use dust of leventa. Leventa means, Rashi explains, means like the word levena in Hebrew. It means a brick. So in other words, you take a brick, you crush it, and you use that to wash and to rub on your face. So that Rabbi Yehuda is saying you're allowed to use because it doesn't necessarily cause hair to come in." Rabbi Hanano gives an explanation that actually what it means is leventa is meloshin levoina. I mean, levoina is frankincense, which is one of the ingredients of the kodas we know. So Rabbi Hanano and a number of other Dishonim learn that it means ground up levoina, that you would be allowed to use that to wash your face with on Shabbos. Again, the point is because it does, even if you have a beard, because it doesn't necessarily cause hair to break off. And Omer Rav Yosef, Rav Yosef says, Kuspa de Yasmin Shori, by the same token, Kuspa, which means soilus, which means the leftover pulp, the Yasmin of Yasmin, also Shori would be allowed. What is that? Rashi says over here, Kuspa de Yasmin means the soilus, means the pulp left over from sesame seeds after you after you press them to get the oil. In the Surah Shafi, brings in more detail actually that what it is what we mean. He brings from the Aruch that what it is jasmine. Literally means jasmine is the extract of a certain flower. So what it is you take this sesame seed pulp. You soak it in jasmine, and then you dry it. Then you grind it up and you use it, and you use it for washing. You use it for washing your hands when they're dirty or something. So in other words, it's made of sesame seed blended with jasmine. So then we're saying that would be mutter because, again, it doesn't necessarily cause hair to wash your face with, even if you have a beard, because it doesn't necessarily cause hair to fall out. And again, Davashan Miskabin is mutter. Omar Rabba, so Rabba says another one, Afar Pilpuli Shari. You're also allowed to use ground up pepper for that purpose. You're allowed to wash your face on Shabbos with ground pepper. I don't know that I'd recommend trying it at home. It would probably make you sneeze a lot, but whatever. Okay. Amar Rav Shesh is Barda Shari. Rav Shesh says, here's another one. You're allowed to wash your face on Shabbos with Barda. What is my Barda? What is Barda? Amar Rav Yosef, it's like this. It's a concoction made of a few different ingredients. Tilta Ahala, one third of it is Ahala, which is aloe or some related plant like that. The Tilta Osa, one third of it is Hadassim. The Tilta Sigli, and one third is made from violet. So you grind them up, or you take the essences of them, or whatever, and mix them together, and you use that as a face wash. Omer of Nechemya by Yosef. So Nechemya by Yosef says the general rule is kol hecha deleka ruba ahala shakir dami. As long as it doesn't contain mostly aloe, then it's allowed. If it contains more than 50% of ahal, of aloe, then you have a problem, because then it's going to be then inevitably it's thick ratio that's going to cause hair to fall out, and you can't do that on Shabbos. But if it's 50% or less of aloe of ahala, then you would be allowed to. So ahala might be aloe, it might be another thing called ice plant, a couple of different possibilities what it is exactly, but whatever it is, if the mixture contains more than 50% of that, then already it's a thick ratio that it's going to cause hair to fall out, and you can't do that. Okay. Another topic, which we'll see, we'll talk about how this relates to what we were saying before. So actually, I shouldn't say another topic. We have to see whether it is a new topic or not. Bo mi name it of Sheshes. They ask of Sheshes the following question: Mahu l'ksoya zaysim b'shabbos? Are you allowed to bruise or crush olives on Shabbos? Meaning, Rashi says like this: olives are naturally very bitter. So if you want to eat olives, so of course one way is that you pickle them, which is usually when we eat olives, they're pickled, and therefore they're not bitter. They actually taste quite good. But you also have another way is that you bruise it, that you break it open on a rock or something, and then that helps take out the bitter component and make it more edible. Are you allowed to do that on Shabbos? Amalahu, so he answers them, never mind on Shabbos. Would the Chachamim even allow you to do that on a weekday? Because what happens is, so Rashi doesn't explain what the problem is with doing it on a weekday. Tosfos explains on behalf of Rashi that what it would be is that the problem would be, so in other words, the question was, are you allowed to, because you're making it into an edible food on Shabbos. Before it was not edible, and now you're making it edible. And the answer is, never mind that. Even on weekdays where you don't have that issue, you still have the problem is that you have the juice that oozes out of them when you do that, which is going to waste. And then you're not allowed to waste food, balbashas. So he's saying that would be an issue. Now, the problem with that is, Tosfos says, if that's what we're talking about, the question of making it edible for food, then what is that doing in our Gemara over here? What is that doing in our Gemara over here? The concept of what you're allowed to squeeze out of food or not is much later in our Masechta, in the 22nd Perek. And also, what do you mean? What kind of hesed oichlin? You're doing it over here in order to make them edible. Who cares if in the course of that some juice gets squeezed out and goes to waste? The point is you're doing it in order to be able to eat the food. But therefore, the Tosfos doesn't like that explanation of Rashi. So therefore, the Tosfos brings from the Ri that the question is just the continuation of the discussion that we were having about what you're allowed to wash your face with on Shabbos. The question is, are you allowed to take olives and bruise them in order to get some of the liquid out of the olives and use that for washing your face on Shabbos? So the question is, are you allowed to do that on Shabbos? And the answer is, never mind on Shabbos, even on weekdays, you're not allowed to do that because you're not allowed to take something that could have been used for food, namely the olives and the juice from them, and waste it and use it like that for a face wash. But according to Tosfos, that's the explanation of what the Gemara is saying over here. The Pnei Yeshua defends Rashi and says that actually what we're dealing with, we're going back to the question of Mukta. We had digressed from Mukta, as it is the discussion of Mukta itself was a digression from the topic of our parak, because we were talking about Atmana. We digressed to talk about Mukta. Within that digression, we went to talk about washing, about what you're allowed and not allowed to wash your face with on Shabbos. So now, according to the Pnei Yeshua, according to Rashi would say, the Gemara is now getting back to the question of Mukta. Given that these are unripe olives and they're not really edible without doing this, so therefore, are they Mukta? Similar to what we learned in the previous parak about Grogus and Timukim, that about we had over there dried figs, all figs or grapes that are in the process of drying, where we said they're Mukta because you can't really eat them on Shabbos. So would it be the same kind of thing or not? And Rav Sheshet answers them, never mind on Shabbos, it's Mukta, but even on weekdays you're not allowed to do it because you're ruining food. Because instead of doing it now, when the olives aren't ripe, wait until they're ripe and then eat them the normal way. The Gemara says, Lema Pliga de Shmuel. Should we have to say then that it's a custom, the Shem Hefzid Oichlin, so he holds, you're not allowed to because you're ruining food that you could have eaten. So the question is, Lema Pliga de Shmuel, does that mean that Rav Sheshet disagrees with Shmuel? The Amar Shmuel Oitza Adam called Soka the past. Namely, Shmuel says that you're allowed to do anything you want with bread or any other food. You're allowed to use bread or other foods for non-food purposes or whatever, and we're not worried about Hefzid Oichlin. So, and Rav Sheshet seems to be disagreeing with that. The answer is Ami. They said the difference is Pas Loy Me'isa. The difference is when you use bread for such a purpose, let's say, for example, you're using a piece of bread, let's say, to hold up. Let's say you have a wobbly, let's say, for example, you have a wobbly bowl and you put a piece of bread under one end of it to hold it up, then you're not ruining the bread. The bread ends up, even afterwards, you're able to eat the bread. You'll take it out from under the bowl over there and eat it. As opposed to over here, as opposed to over here, when it comes to the olives, the liquid that oozes out of them and goes away becomes disgusting, and you're not able to use it anymore. Rav Sheshet does not necessarily disagree with Shmuel. Tosfos actually discusses, we learned in Brachos, we learned about the statement of Shmuel over there, and we said that actually it seems that Shmuel would allow it even if the food does become dirty by that. So how does that fit with our Gemara over here that's saying that's not? The Tosfos asks the question over there and says one answer is that the Gemara is not saying over there that Shmuel necessarily holds that. The Gemara is saying that actually that Rabbi Eliezer would go beyond Shmuel and say that it's allowed even if the thing becomes damaged and unfit to eat. Shmuel himself would say that only if it's not. So in other words, you'd have Rav Sheshet and Shmuel both say that you are allowed, let's say, to use bread for a different purpose, as long as afterwards you could eat the bread or any other food. Rav Eliezer would go beyond that and say that even if it gets ruined, you're allowed to as long as it was for a constructive purpose. So over here, then Rav Sheshet, fine. Rav Sheshet is disagreeing with Rav Eliezer, fine, but he's agreeing with Shmuel. Okay, that's one answer, and then you have different Rishonim bring other possibilities. Okay. continues the Gemara in this connection, going back to the Bauda that we were talking about before. We had this concoction that was made out of, we said this concoction was made out of a mixture of aloe and hadassim and violet, and you use it to wash your face. So the Gemara tells, Amema Mazutra and Rav Ashi Havu Yasvi, Amema Mazutra and Rav Ashi were sitting together on Shabbos. Aisu Kamayu Bauda, they brought them some Bauda to wash with. Amema and Rav Ashi Moshu, so Amema and Rav Ashi washed with it. Mazutra Le Moshe, Mazutra did not wash with it. Omrule, so they said to him, why not? Why aren't you washing with it? Don't you agree with what Rav Shesha says, that you're allowed to wash with Bauda on Shabbos, and there's no problem even if it causes some hair to come out because you didn't intend for it to, and it's not necessarily that it's going to, and therefore it's Dover Shadim Eskaven, and it would be Mutter. So Rav Mordechai, who was another Amora, who was there, said, leave aside what he's doing. Leave aside what Mazutra is doing. You can't prove from what he's doing that you can't, that, like this, they're asking him, you don't hold like Rav Shesha. In other words, does that mean the halacha is not like Rav Shesha? So Rav Mordechai tells them, there's actually no proof from what Mazutra is doing. As a matter of fact, Mazutra holds you wouldn't even be allowed to use Bauda to wash with even on weekdays. Why not? Because he holds that a person is not allowed to savalod pihadatanya, because Mazutra holds, like what we learn in a brisa, megarer adam gilde soya begilde makashal b'sorei. A person is allowed to scrape off, little bits of dirt, or not really little bits. Gilde literally means like a skin. So like you have sometimes, you know, you spill something on yourself or whatever, and it dries and forms like a crust. So a person is allowed to scrape off a crust of dirt, the gilde maka, or a crust on a wound, sha'al b'sarei, that's on his skin, mishvil tsarei, if it's causing him trouble, if it's itching or whatever, or it's itching or hurting him, so he's allowed to do that, in mishvil l'yapos oser. But the braita says, if he's doing it in order to make himself look nicer and more beautiful, then it would be oser, because this braita holds that the Torah tells us, Isser, lo yubash dever simlas isha, that a man is not allowed to wear women's clothing, and it means not only wearing women's clothing, but also doing the kinds of beauty things that women do, and that includes also, for example, making sure that their skin that is nice and clean and whatever. So therefore, so Mazutra holds, based on this braisa, that's fine. Of course, he can wash his hands with water or whatever, but not to use something like Bauda, not to use something like this concoction over here, which would be the kind of extra attention to a person's appearance that is typical of women and not of men, and therefore that it would be also for men. So the question is, the inhu commands varua nu ameima and Rabashi also know that there's an issur of loyovash gever. So what are they holding according to that they say? And Mazutra has a braisa on his side. So what are they going to answer to that? That they are using Bauda? The answer is kihodetanya. They would hold according to a different braisa, which says roichet adam ponav yadav ragla b'chol yom b'shvil koinoi. A person is allowed to and should wash his face and hands and feet every day b'shvil koinoi, for the sake of his creator, meaning for the honor of Hashem. Mishum shenema, koil pa'al Hashem, lama anehu. As the pasuk says, everything Hashem did for himself, for his covenant. We say at the end of Pirkei Avos, kol masha bara HaKadosh Baruch Hu, lo'ibroi elo l'chvodei, everything that Hashem created for his covenant. When a person washes himself and keeps himself clean, it's an honor to Hashem, because a person was created with tselem elokim. So there's no issue of lo'yovash gever in that. That he's beautifying himself in such a way, because he's doing it for the honor of Hashem, because a person is created in Selam Alekim.
Is there an issur for a woman to wear men's clothes?
Yes, there is. Say the issur works in reverse, yes. So it means, for example, actually, yes. So the Gemara talks about it in Masechta Nazir, the main place in Shas, I think, where it talks about the Zinim of Lo Yobash. It mentions, for example, that, yes, the women, one example I think it mentions over there is that women are not allowed to carry weapons, because weapons are usually something that men carry. the how that works with the Israeli soldiers nowadays. I don't know. I mean, the better question is whether women are allowed to serve in the army in the first place, which is questionable at best. I mean, the Rabbanim and the Uri Yerushalayim Patrol were absolutely against that. That's one example. But yeah, you have different examples where women are not allowed to do the kind of things that men typically do. So Mazutra is taking that and based on the Braisa that we quoted in favor of him, that therefore fine, you can wash yourself just regular, but not in a way where you're doing it in order to beautify yourself. Whereas a Maimon and a Rashi are taking the view that you're allowed to because you're doing it for the covet of Hashem.
What's the source of that issur that women are not allowed to wear clothes, the same clothes as men?
The same passage. Lo yovash gever simlas isha. Lo yikli gever al isha. Lo yovash gever simlas isha. The kalim, meaning the accessories or the clothing or whatever of a man are not allowed to be on a woman, and a woman is not, and a man is not allowed to wear a woman's clothing. So it works both ways. If you want to find an example, by the way, if you want to find an example in Torah, usually we have mitzvahs are applicable to men, and then pretty much all mitzvahs are applicable to men, and then many of them are applicable to women. And of course, we know women are potter from mitzvahs etzah shazman grama and a couple of others. And you want to find a mitzvah that applies exclusively to women? There you have one. only women are subject to the mitzvah of not wearing men's clothing. Okay. Anyway, the point is, Maharsha says, we're not just talking about the person's face. The person's face is the main thing in which is created the Tzelem Elokim, but also, to a certain extent, his hands and feet also. Because a normal person has ten fingers and 10 toes, and that represents the 10 spheres with which Hashem created the world. So therefore, we can say that a person's hands and feet also represent Elokus, just like his face, just like on his face, you see the Tzelem Elokim. So therefore, that's what we're saying, the face and hands and feet. Okay. We said in the Mishnah, Rabbi Lazar ben Azalia, a kupa masa al tida of the Noitel, we said in the Mishnah that if you have a basket, again, you have a basket full of wool shearing, and you have the pot inside it, and we established before that many times the wool shearings are going to be mukta. So we said you have to pick up the pot lid, and then the wool will fall off. So Rabbi Lazar ben Azariah says, kupa, when it comes to the basket that has the pot, that has the wool on the pot inside it, maka al figa, we said you have to turn it on its side, the noito, and only then you can take out the food. Don't take out the actual pot from among the wool. Shema yito, because if you take it out, then you might not be able to put it back, because the wool is mukta, and the wool, you can't move aside the wool to put it back. And then we said in the Mishnah, the Mishnah had said that no, you could take out the pot, you could put it back in. So what's the actual machlokes? Amar of Abba, Amar of Chiya Ba'ashi, Amar Rav, Hakol Mordim Shein Neskalkul Aguma. Everybody would agree that if the guma, if the hole in the basket where the pot was, if it actually fell in, if you took out the pot and the wool fell in, and now you don't have a space to put back the pot. So then, also lahaster, for sure you're not allowed to put back the pot. So my focus would be, if it wasn't the scalpel, are you allowed to? So the Gemara says, no, well, let's see. The Mishnah says, the Chum say you're allowed to take out the pot, and you're allowed to put it back in. Hey, she dummy. So what's the scenario that the Chum are saying? Either in the scalpel haguma, if the hole is still intact, and you're able to put back the pot without moving any of the wool. So what's the problem? Shapu kamir rabbanon. The rabbanon are saying very well what the rabbanon are saying to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is very correct. Why is Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah disagreeing? What's the problem? If the hole is still intact, what's the problem? Elav afafid in a scalp lagoma. Evidently, we have to be talking about that the hole has been ruined, that the wool fell in. That's why Rabbi Elazar says you can't put it back. But we see the Chachamim apparently are allowing you to put it back. So what are you telling us that even the Chachamim agree that you can't? The answer is loy. No, that's not what the Mishnah means. La'olam deloy niskalkala. The Mishnah is, in fact, talking that the hole was not ruined. The hole is still completely intact. So therefore, if the hole is still completely intact, sure, you're allowed to put back the pot. The machlokas is, do we have to be concerned that it might have gotten ruined? The Rebbe Lozman and Azariah says you have to be concerned that the whole might get ruined, because what happens if you take out the pot? Some of the wool might fall into that hole. Now you don't have an intact hole anymore. Now you don't have a space to put the pot back in. And then therefore, what's going to happen? You're going to want to put the pack. You're going to want to put the pot back in, because after all, you want to keep it warm for the rest of Shabbos. And therefore, you're going to end up moving the wool, and that would be also because it's mukta. Well, Marasava in Choshishin, where's the Tanakama, where's the Chachamim, rather say that we're not worried about that. If it collapses, then you're right. You're not going to be able to put it back in. But as long as it didn't, then you're allowed to put back the pot. Basically, in other words, the Ritzvah explains, the Chachamim would say it would be Gzera. As it is to not move the wool themselves is Gzera, because it's only Mukta. And they're saying you're not going to make a Gzera, that either it might fall in, and then you're going to move it. That would already be a Gzera. The Rashba brings a bit of a different explanation, that Rebbe Lozman and Azariah is concerned that if you take the pot out when the basket is standing straight up, then you're not allowed to put back the pot unless you are absolutely certain that the hole is still intact. If you don't know for sure, you have to, in other words, he would say you have to actually check before you put it back in. You can't just assume that the hole is still there. Whereas the Chachamim would say that you don't have to worry about that unless you have reason to assume that the hole got ruined. Let's say somebody went and shook the basket or something. Okay, the halacha is like a Chachamim, so therefore you would be allowed to put it back as long as the hole is still intact. If they in fact fall in, then the wool is in fact mukta, and you can't put it back in unless under the conditions that we said before. Again, we said the halacha was that if the wool is not from the heftik, if it's not from a warehouse, then you, as long as you use it, the fact that you use it for hasmana, even if it was the one time, makes it not mukta, and you're allowed to move it. So you'll be allowed to move it and put the pot back. But if the wool came from a heftik, if it came from a warehouse, then you would only be able to use it, then you would only be able to move it only if you designated that for on an ongoing basis, you're going to be using it for hasmana. Okay. So we'll continue tomorrow morning, that's the Shem.
What time?
Yeah.